You know, I look forward to this hour every week when Raphael Goyeneche joins us from the Metro Crime Commission, because it really is always enlightening. We learn a lot, and it gives us a whole lot to think about, because the Metro Crime Commission has been in this community making important advancements in helping move law enforcement and safety forward, and always does it in the name of proper research, gathering information, and letting us know what we need to know. So with that having been said, Raphael, thank you for joining us every week and for joining us today here on WWL.
Hey, thank you for that introduction. The Crime Commission's been around now for 74 years, so this predates me. This has been our organization was created by the business community in recognition that crime and corruption are disincentives to growth. So me, my predecessors, and my successors are going to continue to do what you just described in the introduction.
You know, someone actually asked me the other day, how long has Raphael been doing this? And I looked it up, and I was a little surprised that you've been at it for a while.
Yeah, 40 years. This is the 40th year doing this.
Yeah. Yep. Congratulations. Yep. Yeah, I'm 29 years. And I said, well, I know he's been here longer than I have. So.
Yeah, I guess I'm doing life without parole.
All right. Well, we'll give you a little extra time in the yard. that having
well,
been
good.
Said, let's
That's
get back.
That's a perfect segue into our first topic.
Where do you want to start?
Leon Cannizzaro.
Yeah, you know, longtime district attorney here in New Orleans, and went on to work at the Attorney General's office. It looks like that time is over, huh?
Well, yeah, but I don't think that's the last. And, you know, he announced that he was stepping away a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted to talk about him because he's more than just, you know, the head of the Attorney General's criminal division or even the former district attorney. He talked about, you know, I've been doing this job here for 40 years, and before that I was 5 years as a prosecutor. So my career in criminal justice has been at two locations, the New Orleans District Attorney's Office and the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Leon's career spans a longer period of time than myself. So Leon Cannizzaro was I went to high school with Leon. Leon was a little older than me, and, you know, he got out of law school before I did, and he went to go work in the district attorney's office in 1979. So he served as an assistant district attorney for about 5 years, and he left the DA's office to be a public defender. So he had experience as a prosecutor and a defense attorney, criminal defense attorney. And then he decided he wanted to get back into public service and ran for a judgeship in criminal district court and was elected and assumed the bench in 1986. And he served there until 2002. And during his tenure as a judge in criminal district court, he, you know, the Crime Commission was issuing reports about judicial efficiency and judicial accountability back in that era. And we documented that Leon Cannizzaro was one of the top two judges every year in our surveys as far as productivity and efficiency. So from being a district court judge in New Orleans, he had the hankering to seek a position on the First Circuit Court of Appeals. He won that election and served on the Court of Appeals for about 5 years when he decided that he wanted to be the DA. So he left his judgeship, you know, the Court of Appeals, to run for DA and was elected. And he served as DA from 2008 to 2020. And during that period of time, distinguished himself. That was really his calling, as a prosecutor and leading that agency. And those were through some pretty tough times in the community with law enforcement and things like that. And he held steady in that. And in 2020, he elected not to run for re-election. And he, people thought that he was walking away into retirement, only to see him surface the next year as the head of the criminal division for the Louisiana Attorney General's office under Jeff Landry. And he served in that position after Jeff Landry was elected governor under Liz Merle. So he served 5 years there. So his tenure in the New Orleans criminal justice system spans almost 50 years. Wow. And he is one of the most influential criminal justice officials in the modern history of the city of New Orleans. And I think it's important to, you know, let your audience know, you know, his decades of service to this community. And, you know, I respect him and admire what he's done for this community and for criminal justice and public safety. And I wish him and his family the best as he moves on to the next phase. But I don't think the next phase of his life is going to be puttering around the house or working in the garden.
So, you alluded to that in your open. So what do you think is next for Leon Cannizzaro?
I don't know, but Leon Cannizzaro is like the Energizer Bunny. You know, he is not going to sit, you know, for long. And, you know, I don't know what he's going to do next, but I'm predicting today right now that, you know, we haven't seen the last of him in public service.
Do we know why he's elected to step away from the Attorney General's office at this time?
Well, I talked to him and he said, look, it's time. He said he promised Liz Merle that he'd stick around for a year or two. He stuck around for nearly 3 years. And he had to commute to Baton Rouge frequently as the head of the division. And he got tired of that drive back and forth because he still lives out in Lakeview. So he decided that he wanted to spend more time with his family than in the car, driving back and forth from New Orleans to Baton Rouge. And, you know, he's earned that, but I just know him too well to think that that's going to be the last that we've heard from Leon, because he has a lot more left in the tank, and he's a wealth of resources and knowledge and experience. And I hope that if he does choose to do something again, that he finds the right spot to make a contribution.
All right. Well, I'm making a note on this date that you said we have not heard the last from Leon Cannizzaro, and I'm sure we will revisit that sometime down the road. Have we heard the last from Randy Smith? Because we haven't heard anything from him since the incident at the steakhouse in which he is alleged to have attacked a blogger who is a longtime critic of his, followed by his arrest and more developments coming out. He released a single statement and has been silent ever since. I know you have been busy looking at this case and following the developments. Where do we start on the conversation about St. Tammany Parish Sheriff Randy Smith?
Well, let's start from the date of the incident. So this was May the 29th, and here we are on June the 11th. So in about, 2 weeks, over the last 2 weeks, we've learned a lot more about all of this. So this happened on a Friday afternoon. And setting the table on this, I think it's important that, you know, to note that Randy Smith was in, you know, a well-known upscale steakhouse in Madisonville, kind of the hot spot in western St. Tammany Parish to enjoy, you know, a Friday afternoon. So he was in there as the guest of a bail bondsman that does business in St. Tammany Parish. And he had been there. He arrived about noon and was at a table with the bondsman. And I can't tell you how many other people were at that table. I do know from the arrest warrant indicates that the restaurant tab for that table was approaching $400, and you're looking at a bottle of wine and 13 drinks, hard liquor, you know, including a number of 7 or 8 shots of tequila, beer, and mixed drinks. So they had been there for about 4 hours eating and drinking when about 4:30 in the afternoon, the sheriff was alerted that one of his quote-unquote adversaries was seated at the bar. And his adversary was a blogger that had issued postings about the sheriff drinking at various events and then getting in a vehicle and driving away. So there was some bad blood there on the part of the sheriff and animosity towards this person. The arrest warrant indicates that, or that the victim in this, so Mr. Cuvion, was at a table or at the bar, I believe, with his wife and some family members celebrating his birthday. And the video from the restaurant shows the sheriff coming up behind Mr. Cuvion, placing him in a chokehold and pulling him off the stool and pulling him to the ground, and the sheriff's body weight coming down on top of Mr. Cuvion. And he began to pummel and kick him, and then the sheriff had to be pulled off of Mr. Cuvion. So the sheriff knows that there was an incident and the authorities have been called. And rather than waiting for the authorities to arrive, waiting for the police to arrive or the sheriff's office to arrive, he flees the scene of the restaurant. Now, apparently, he drove himself to the restaurant in a public vehicle, an unmarked public vehicle. And there is video evidence allegedly showing that one of the guests at the table that the sheriff was with, a bail bondsman, drove him, took him out of the restaurant, loaded him in his public vehicle, sheriff's office vehicle, and drove the sheriff not back to the police station, not to a hospital to be drug tested, but drove him home. So we know that because in the arrest warrant, the bail bondsman gave a statement to the authorities, and the bail bondsman confirmed what I just stated. So the bail bondsman confirmed that the sheriff directed him to drive him away from the scene in a public vehicle. And, of course, the person that drove him away was the person that was seated at the table. And we also know from the arrest warrants that the person that drove him away walked from the sheriff's table a couple of times to verify that Mr. Cuvion was, in fact, at the bar. And some of the video that was obtained by the investigators determined that Mr. Siraj, who was the bail bondsman,
Gregory Siraj,
gave a fist pump to the sheriff, slamming his fist into his open hand, confirming that that was, in fact, Mr. Cuvion. And that triggered the sheriff to get up from his table and attack and sucker punch, you know, Mr. Cuvion. So we know that the sheriff was arrested about a week or so ago. And then later last week, there was another arrest warrant issued in which the bail bondsman, Mr. Siraj, was arrested. And, you know, that may be the part that we stop and come back and
yes,
talk about the rest of this.
That's what I was going to suggest. We're going to pause the conversation right there and pick it up. Now we know what the allegations are. Now we know what the investigation, the video, the arrest warrant show. So where do we go from here and what happens next? And what does the future look like for St. Tammany Sheriff Randy Smith? We'll find out after this on WWL. Talking with Rafael Goyeneche of the Metro Crime Commission, we all know that everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law in this United States of America. That having been said, we're talking about St. Tammany Sheriff Randy Smith and what the arrest warrant and other supporting documents tell us about what is to allege to have happened Friday, May 29th, on the North Shore involving the sheriff of St. Tammany Parish. Raphael, you just laid out what the evidence is that we know before us now. So with all that information, and the Attorney General's office called in to investigate this because of any fear of conflict of interest, as this is a sitting sheriff of a parish, specifically St. Tammany, how did the investigation move forward, and we end up with the charges that we now have before us?
Okay, so what we know is, what we just talked about, is the fact that, you know, the sheriff was involved in an incident in this restaurant. When the 911 call was placed and when it was reported to law enforcement, the first responders were St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's deputies. Once they learned that the sheriff was the alleged perpetrator of this offense, they immediately recused themselves and called to request that the Louisiana Bureau of Investigation, which is the investigative arm of the Attorney General's office, take over this investigation.
Is that the right thing for them to do?
Well, yes, they could, but they secured the location and secured the evidence. And they took a few statements, but, you know, in reading what the St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office, how they initially reported this, they reported that the sheriff left the scene. When the Louisiana Bureau of Investigation arrived, they concluded that the sheriff fled the scene. So that's
an important distinction. Just leaving is one thing. Fleeing the scene of a crime as an alleged perpetrator has far more legal ramifications.
Right. So keep in mind that the LBI, Louisiana Bureau of Investigation, reviewed the video evidence, spoke to a number of witnesses that were there, obtained the restaurant tab and bar bill for the sheriff. So they had to take all of that evidence to a judge who reviewed it and signed an arrest warrant authorizing them to arrest Sheriff Smith on one felony account of second-degree battery, and that's, you know, punishable by up to 8 years in the state penitentiary, and two misdemeanor counts of disturbing the peace. So
now, a lot of people have suggested that if you or I had done this, the process would have been much faster to put us in cuffs and bring us to jail. Is that true, or do you think that everything happened as it had to, based on what we know?
So I believe if the sheriff had remained on at the location, he would have been arrested and booked at that time. But because he left the scene, it delayed the fact that they had to go obtain an arrest warrant. So normally what happens in a situation like that, you could talk to victims and witnesses and make a decision about probable cause. He would have been arrested that Friday afternoon had he remained there. I believe that the sheriff realized that. That's why he fled the scene.
So we don't think he received special treatment, at least based on what we know now. It does not appear.
So the sheriff's office, once they realized, they immediately called for someone else to come in and conduct that investigation. Those investigators weren't in Covington, Louisiana. They were in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It took them a couple of hours to get down to that scene in all of this. So by then, the sheriff is gone, which means that they have to obtain an arrest warrant. So they, you know, not only took statements from witnesses, they obtained the video evidence and everything, and then they had to go compile all that and seek an arrest warrant, which lengthens the amount of time and it explains, you know, the days that went by. So, again, the fact that the sheriff left the scene, to me, is an acknowledgement or an indication, a strong indicator, that he knew that if he had remained there, he would have been arrested at the scene.
Is that a violation of the law, him leaving the scene?
Well, okay, so there are several layers to this investigation. He's been arrested now on criminal violations. But on top of all of that, there are policies and procedures that he, as the sheriff of St. Tammany Parish, requires all of his employees to abide by. So some of those policies and procedures, those are administrative. They're not criminal. So, you know, when an officer is involved in a questionable incident, they don't leave the scene of a crime. When you go to work for the St. Tammany Sheriff's Office, they make it very clear that you're not allowed to drink alcohol while on duty. You're not allowed to be intoxicated while on duty. If there's an incident, you're supposed to submit to blood alcohol and drug testing. If a officer is arrested or a deputy for a violent felony offense, that can trigger an immediate suspension and possible termination. There's also a policy in the St. Tammany Sheriff's Office that civilians are not authorized to drive a public vehicle. So the sheriff violated six of his own internal policies, any one of which would have been enough to suspend. Collectively, he would have had the authority to fire anyone that had perpetrated any or all of these administrative violations. But even after he was arrested for the violent felony offense and two misdemeanors, his only statement was that, you know, he apologized and provided a statement about Mr. Kuvion in a veiled manner, saying that he had embarrassed and, I guess, stalked his family. But that doesn't justify any of that. And if the sheriff, he also stated that he intended to continue to serve as sheriff. So,
and has thus far continued to serve as sheriff.
Right. So any deputy that did any of that would not be serving as a deputy right now. They'd either be suspended or terminated. But because he's the sheriff, the rules don't necessarily apply to him. So where we leave this thing
is... Technically, his boss is the people of St. Tammany Parish.
Exactly. And he's not required to step down unless he's convicted of a felony or pleads guilty to a felony. A misdemeanor conviction does not trigger automatic disqualification from elective or appointed of office under Louisiana law. But he was arrested for a felony. So the next step is that just because these arrest warrants were obtained for him and Mr. Siraj, that doesn't mean the investigation is over. And the arrest warrant is not a police report. It's not the final report. There's going to be information that the Louisiana Bureau of Investigation has already obtained or is in the process of obtaining that will be in their final police report that was not in the arrest warrants. So once that final report is finished, it'll be presented to the St. Tammany DA's office. I suspect that the St. Tammany DA's office, because of their close working relationship with the sheriff's office, will recuse themselves, which means that the responsibility for prosecuting that case goes to the attorney general's office. The attorney general's office is not bound by or limited by the arrest warrant. They could determine that the offense could be upgraded or downgraded or additional charges could be brought. But the important thing is that I want the audience to understand there's a big difference between an arrest warrant and a final police report. If the final police report was already prepared, it would have been presented to the DA, and we'd know if the DA is recusing himself. So the fact that this report has not been presented to a prosecutor yet is an indication to me that the investigation is ongoing, additional evidence is being collected, and we're not going to know exactly what charges the sheriff is going to be prosecuted for until that report is presented to a prosecutor, and then the prosecutor decide what is the proper charge to go forward.
So we could be looking at weeks or months.
Well, no, I don't think so. I would think, in the next week or 10 days at the most on something like this. So, you know, there are witnesses, there's video evidence, and there's some other things that are going to be looked at. And once that's done, it'll be written up and presented. So I think in the next week to 10 days, it'll go to a prosecutor, and we ought to know shortly after that what's going to happen.
If even with it going to the DA's office, them having to recuse themselves, which you expect they will do, then it going to the Attorney General's office, that will have those answers within the next 10 days or so.
I think so. And then if the sheriff is charged with a felony, you know, I believe that he would be best served by resigning his position in this. He's not required to under the law. But if he is being prosecuted for a felony offense, he has lost credibility to lead that organization. And I think that, you know, from a integrity standpoint, it's critically important that that agency has the respect and confidence of the public. And because of what he has done, I think that if he's charged with a felony, the responsible thing to do is to go ahead and resign. And then he has a decision to make about, you know, the prosecution in this case, but he's not required by law to do that unless and until he's convicted or pleads guilty. If he is convicted or pleads guilty to a felony under Louisiana law, that would trigger an immediate suspension without pay and would start the process of removal from office that would be pursued by, I believe, the Attorney General's office.
Well, and it's important to note, under Louisiana law, he would also lose his pension if he's convicted of a felony, correct?
Well, he'd be grandfathered in because he that forfeiture provision only applies to people that were hired after the date that this statute came into place.
Uh-huh.
So he's not in danger of losing his pension. I think what he's in danger of doing is harming the ability of the St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office to enjoy the full trust and confidence of the public.
Do we know right now if he's still actively running the sheriff's department? Do we have any idea how that's unfolding?
Well, we don't know if he's been at work or not, but the only public statement that he made is he's going to continue to serve in his capacity as sheriff at that stage. But that was only after the arrest. And I think he's going to have to make a statement and make a decision if and when he is charged with a felony offense by the prosecutor that will be handling this case.
And we'd be shocked if he's not charged with a felony at this point, correct?
Based on all of the evidence that was presented in the arrest warrant, I anticipate that he will be charged with at least one felony offense.
We're talking with Rafael Goyeneche at the Metro Crime Commission. That's the latest on Sheriff Randy Smith. Still many unanswered questions, but now we know what we know and where the process goes from here. From here, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Republic mass shooting arrests. After a 26-month investigation, it took finally arrests in a mass shooting outside of a New Orleans nightclub. We'll find out details about that as Rafael Goyeneche continues to share his expertise and information with us here on WWL. And it's the Crime Hour with Rafael Goyeneche of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. And Rafael, it took a whole long time, but finally we have had arrests in the Republic mass shooting case. Tell us how we got here and if it looks like finally things are on the right track.
Right. So the Republic mass shooting case, which occurred April the 14th of 2024, was the largest single mass shooting incident that I've documented over the last 6 years. So I didn't go back any further than that, probably goes back much further than that. You're looking at 11 non-fatal victims and one homicide victim. So you're looking at 12 people that were shot in this incident. And I've read the arrest warrants in this case. Five individuals were arrested earlier this week. And this arrest warrant is really the new model of investigations going forward. This is the way cases like this are solved. Maybe, you know, a few years ago, this case is unsolvable because law enforcement would rely on eyewitness accounts. And, you know, this was a drive-by shooting, and nobody really, you know, that spoke to law enforcement provided them anything. This case was solved by law enforcement, particularly the New Orleans Police Department, Detective Donald Willyard. You know, he did a masterful job of weaving together evidence from a variety of different platforms that include digital evidence, ballistic evidence, cell phone evidence, GPS evidence, license plate scanners, and social media to obtain the arrest warrants that resulted in the arrest of these five individuals. Three of the five were arrested from outside of Orleans Parish. The takedown of these five individuals was carefully coordinated so that everyone was arrested at about the same time, which required the assistance of the FBI, the Louisiana State Police, the St. John the Baptist Parish Sheriff's Office, and the St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office. So all five of these individuals were being investigated for a long time. But in reading this arrest warrant, it provides really the mechanics of how these types of cases are solved. And I just want to just kind of briefly go through this, you know, so your audience can gain a better appreciation of the fine work that was done by the NOPD and this detective in this case.
And hopefully a model for other investigations going forward. Yeah, please, well, do take us through how it works.
So, you know, we issue reports all the time showing how violent crime is going down in this community and has been going down since 2024. And it's gone down despite the fact that we are grossly undermanned from the police department. And I think in 2024, the police department realized that they weren't going to be able to respond to crime with numbers, you know, meaning that police officers can't flood an area or do some of the things they did when they had 1,600 officers. So they lean more into technology. And it's technology that, you know, resulted in this case being solved. So the way that this went down is that we had this shooting, and they determined that a white Camry was fleeing the scene. The detective checked to see if there are any white Camrys reported stolen, and they determined that one was stolen a day or two before this event. They determined that that stolen vehicle was a rental vehicle. In rental vehicles, they have GPS systems. So he obtained copies of the GPS tracking of that vehicle. And the GPS records put that white Camry at the scene of the crime when the crime was committed.
All right, we're going to pause right there. We're going to have to pause you right there. When we come back, we'll let you finish how they then connected those dots over the 26 months course of this investigation, and we're able to make arrests. Rafael Goyeneche picks it up there after this on WWL. Talking to Rafael Goyeneche about the mass shooting in the Warehouse District at the Republic nightclub that's finally led to arrest some 26 months later. Rafael, you told us the detective found out that the vehicle used in this was a rental car, was able to establish from GPS it was at the scene of the crime. What happened from there?
So they were able to track the vehicle using city license plate scanners that are deployed, and they determined that that vehicle left the crime scene and exited the interstate out in the 7th District. The detective handling this case knows from experience that many of those stolen cars that are used to commit crimes are set on fire in a secluded areas of the 7th District. And he canvassed the area and found the white Camry that had been set on fire. They determined from the VIN number that that was the white Camry. The license plate had been removed. From the smoldering car in the 7th District, they found shell casings that were used to ballistically match the shell casings that were located at the scene of the crime. the GPS data from that vehicle used to establish that that stolen car was at the scene of the shooting at the time the shooting occurred was also used by the detective to find out where that stolen car was before the event occurred. And they were able to track it to a location in New Orleans within an hour of the shooting in which that car rendezvoused with two other cars. The occupants of all three cars got out and spoke in that meeting. They call that referred to in the warrant as the meetup, where that meetup with three vehicles converging at this location. And that was captured and verified not just by the GPS of the white Camry, but there were cameras at the scene that captured images of the people that were subject to that meetup. And from
so
there,
now they have faces. Now they can identify
they have
suspects.
Faces, you know. So they
well,
were.
I got
able
about
to
a minute left.
Okay, you know, so bottom line is they shared those pictures with other members of law enforcement. They got the identities. They tracked those inmate or those offenders through their cell phones. They got their cell phone records, which also put them at the scene of the crime and the scene of the meetup. So this took months and months. It took better part of 2 years. It's not like this is just one case that this detective can handle from start to finish on the spot. This detective has probably a couple of dozen cases that he's working on. And it took warrants and time to obtain all of these records. So where we know this case is right now, this is the, you know, they went to an arrest. And as we talked about in the last segment, an arrest warrant is not the final police report. The investigation is still going on. The objective is to convict these individuals. For the
Absolutely.
Arrest warrant, they needed to establish probable cause. And I think that the detectives are continuing to mine evidence. And I expect that this case will be presented to a prosecutor, the DA's office, over the next couple of several weeks.
Thank you, Raphael. We need more detectives with that kind of dedication. Absolutely. It's been a great hour. See you tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. Scoot is next, folks. Thanks, Raphael.